If you begin turning to Luke chapter 12, we're going to be studying from one of the parables tonight. As you're turning there, let me just say about 1 o'clock, a little after 1 o'clock this afternoon, Tamara, I, and Larissa hears this whining of engines like a plane going down right above our house. And sure enough, there was a private plane that crashed in the hill into a house up on the hill right above us. And, of course, they sent every fire truck there is in the near location. So there was engines from Anaheim, from Yorba Belinda, from Orange. And I usually don't work Sunday, but because of this, I went into the station. And as soon as I got there, I was the first one there. We got a cardiac call in Yorba Belinda. And so my crew showed up. We went on that with Brea Engine 3. So that's how many units were on this thing. We had to respond with Brea Engine 3. So quite an eventful afternoon. The crew came, and I was able to get out of there and come and be with all of you. So now, on a more serious note, the Super Bowl's going on, and I have it recorded, so no fear of looking up the score or even giving me a fake score or anything like that. So, all right, so we're going to talk about the parable of the rich fool. And recently I've been going back through some parables. You might remember a few weeks ago we brought out some things about the parable of the Pharisee and the tax gatherer. And I want to do the same thing with this particular parable, take kind of another fresh look at it. And so let's begin in Luke chapter 12, and the story actually begins in verse 13. Here is Jesus, and he is teaching, actually two groups he's teaching here, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Some very, very important lessons. He's actually warning the people about the leaven, the influence of the Pharisees. He's talking about the importance of confessing him before men and some other things. And all of a sudden, in the midst of his sermon, verse 13, someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who appointed me a judge or arbiter over you?" And then he said to them, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man was very productive. And he began reasoning to himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops?' Then he said, 'This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and all my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your soul is required of you. And now who will own what you have prepared?' And so is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. And he said to his disciples, For this reason, I say to you, do not worry about your life as to what you will eat, nor your body as to what you will put on.'" So as you look at this parable, it appears that Jesus never intended to give this parable, but he was interrupted. It's like a preacher preaching, and all of a sudden, someone stands up from the audience and just interrupts with something completely off topic. Something they think is so much more important. Someone says, "Tell my brother to share the inheritance with me." And so Jesus, being the master teacher, doesn't miss a step. What you notice, he doesn't give in to this man's wishes. He says, "I'm not going to be a judge. I'm not going to be your arbiter. But what I will do, I'll tell you a lesson that you need to hear as well as everyone else there. And so, as you go back into the chapter, Jesus appears to be talking to, teaching two different groups of people. One of the groups is what we might call the inner circle. He teaches his disciples. For example, look if you would at chapter 12 and in verse 1, at the very beginning of the chapter, it says, under these circumstances, after so many thousands of people had gathered together that they were stepping on one another, look at this. He began saying to his disciples, first of all, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Now, no doubt, all the crowd is hearing these words, but they are addressed specifically to the inner circle, the disciples. He speaks to them first, and he starts speaking and teaching them, and then all of a sudden, the outer circle interrupts. One in the crowd said, tell my brother to share the inheritance. And after speaking to him, he then in verse 13, notice it says, or verse 15, then he said to the crowd, beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. And so Jesus starts talking to the outer circle, this group of people that have gathered, thousands it says, who apparently are there for different reasons. They're not the committed disciples. Some are there maybe because, well, there's nothing else to do. Well, it's kind of exciting to see what happens here. See if maybe he does a miracle. Others perhaps were contemplating becoming disciples, whatever. And so they seem to be separated from the inner circle. And then you have, interestingly, chapter 12, verse 22. After the parable, notice in verse 22, he goes back to the inner circle. And he said to his disciples, don't worry about your life or what you'll eat or your body for this very parable, for this very reason. And then, later on in verse 41, Peter wants to know, who are you talking to, Lord? Notice verse 41, Peter said, Lord, are you addressing this parable to us, the inner circle, or to everyone else as well? So even Peter makes the distinction. Who are you talking to? And then finally, verse 54, Jesus goes back to the outer circle. In fact, in verse 56, because they cannot tell the sign of the times, Jesus calls them hypocrites. So verse 54, and he was saying to the crowds, and in verse 56, you hypocrites, you know how to analyze the appearance of the earth and the sky, but why do you not analyze this present time? And why do you not even on your own initiative judge what is right? So you have this kind of outer, inner pattern of Jesus addressing the crowd. And the whole thing starts when the outer crowd interrupts Jesus. And so, like I said, Jesus doesn't miss a step. He starts talking about this fool. So here's this man who interjects himself in the conversation, interrupting Jesus for something he feels is so much more important. But notice what it is. He is talking about something of this world. He interrupts Jesus to talk about something that is in the world, that is concerning him, something that really, when you look at it, it's not going to last. It's going to be temporary, right? And so, here Jesus is giving these spiritual lessons. And what happens? This man wants something to do with the world. And there's people like that. In fact, there are sometimes people that come to worship and they just can't get their mind off of things in the world. I think there are things that are so important in the world, cares and concerns. And so this man really doesn't understand. He's part of the outer crowd. And so Jesus refuses to be the arbiter. But instead, I believe that we focus this, we call it the rich fool, the parable of the rich fool. We focus on this rich fool that Jesus is describing in the parable, but I really believe what Jesus is doing, if this man cares to see it, he's the fool. Jesus is giving him a clear vision of where he's headed. Perhaps he's already there. I don't know if this man ever got the point, but I really believe Jesus was describing this man. And so the lesson of the parable is given in chapter 12, verse 15. Before the parable even begins, Jesus says, here's the point. So Jesus said to the crowd, beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. And I want to say, if you don't get anything else from this lesson tonight, I want you to pay close attention to that. Because even though that we know the Lord and we know what is important, we can very easily fall to that same temptation, where we think the good life is enjoying the possessions of this world and the things of this world. That we become so overcrowded in our lifestyle with the things of this world that really we become foolish. Jesus says to them, not only do they need to beware of this, they need to be on guard, like a soldier holding his post in alertness. And did you notice in verse 15? He not only talks about being on your guard against greed, he says there's different forms of greed. Against every form of greed. That might be a good sermon some might want to work on someday, the different forms of greed. But I want to tell us that as we start a new year, 2019, and we've got goals and we've got plans, big plans, that's great. But let's not make plans to the extent where we're saying that life is all about possession. Let's not make plans and goals to where we're going to lose focus of what life is really all about. That's the point of the parable. Now, we so often, as we look at this parable, and I don't have any problem with that, we're going to do that tonight. We often look at the negative things of this man. We learn the good lessons from the badness of this man. But like we talked about in the former parable, I believe that Jesus is not bringing out a man that is a straw horse. It's easy to knock down, easy to show just how terrible what he was doing and thinking was. But Jesus was, in essence, building up a character that, from a worldly point of view, most people would respect and would strive to be like. There are some good qualities of this man. Good qualities that you and I can learn from. And that's where we're going to start tonight. We're going to talk about the good fool. For example, number one, it tells us that his land was very productive. That comes in verse 16. The land of a rich man was very productive. Now, he lived in a time where there was crop failures, where there was famine, where it was not always easy to sow a big crop or reap a big crop. But here's a man who is successful sowing and reaping. And I want to tell you, success doesn't happen by accident. And we live in a generation, we live in a society that so many in our world think that you can become wealthy without absolutely no work. There's always these get-rich-quick schemes. People thinking that they are earned that type of American dream. But I want to tell you, success doesn't happen by accident. This man didn't just become wealthy. No doubt he worked hard to be successful. And that's the American dream, if there's an American dream. Not that you are going to come here and you're going to get wealthy and successful, but for most people come here, you have an opportunity. But you have to work the opportunity. You have to make use of the opportunity. And there's too many people that just want it all handed to them. That's not what this man was about. And I would imagine that, especially in his early days, he worked very hard. And as he worked, he learned lessons, good and bad. He had failures, but he learned from those failures. He had successes, and he applied those successes to bigger successes until where his land was very successful, very productive. And that's our goal in life. We're not going to do everything perfect, but we want to learn from our mistakes. We want to apply our successes to get even greater successes. And most of all, like Jesus wants us to do with this individual, we want to learn from people, both from their mistakes and from their successes, so that we don't have to repeat the mistakes. We can learn from their misadvantages. And so we need to be able to learn from lessons and apply them to our work, to our life. This man learned the lesson of sowing and reaping. The Bible even talks about that. Hold your place in Luke 12. Go over to 2 Corinthians chapter 9. And in verse 6, 2 Corinthians 9, where Paul talks about this lesson. In verse 6, Paul writes, "Now this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one of us must do just as he purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver." Now, Paul takes that very important lesson of sowing and reaping, and of course, he applies it to our giving back to God, to our spiritual giving. But too many people in the world want to sow sparingly, but reap bountifully. And this man learned the lesson. You can't do that. This man sowed bountifully so that he could reap bountifully. He knew how to do that. This man learned the lesson of a good work ethic. Go over to 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 10, if you would. 2 Thessalonians. Paul there tells the Christians of Thessalonians this principle. "For even when we are with you, we used to give you this order. If anyone is not willing to work, then he is not to eat either. For we hear that some among you are leading an undisciplined life, doing no work at all, but acting like busybodies." And so even God says, when a man's not willing to work, then neither is he afforded the privilege of eating. This man wasn't like that. This man learned to work. He had a good work ethic. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 10, if you would. Ecclesiastes, let's look at the words of the wise man Solomon. Ecclesiastes 9 and in verse 10, where Solomon writes these words, "Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For there is no activity or planning or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol," where you're going. That's a principle in the Bible that runs throughout the Bible. Two things there. Number one, while we're living in this world, God emphasizes this is a time for work. This is a time for us to work the works of God. Our days of rest will come in the life to come. But also, it tells us as we're working, we need to take pride in our work. We need to work hard no matter what we're doing, says Solomon. And so if we have what we might consider a blue-collar job or a menial job where we work fast food or we work as a janitor, there's nothing wrong with that. And we need to work as hard as we can and take pride in that work. If we have a white-collar job, something that has a little more prestige in our society, there's nothing wrong with that. But we need to work hard and be proud of our work. no matter what we're doing. We need to work hard and take pride. This man seemed to be the epitome of that very lesson. And so as a result, he was successful. Good lessons. Secondly, this is a good fool because what? He was proactive. He planned for the future. Go back to Luke chapter 12, if you would. And notice, in verse 17, he began reasoning to himself, saying, "What shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops?" Then he said, "This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns, and I will build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and all my goods." This man was so successful that apparently he couldn't use everything that he was reaping at that time. He had an abundance, and so he saw that there was a need for planning for the future, and that's what he did. He decided to tear down the barns that were too small and to build larger barns. He didn't rest on his present success, but he looked to the future. I want to tell you, we need to be future planners. There's nothing wrong with planning for our physical life, having goals, dreams, things we want to accomplish. And I think probably all of us do that. But I want to tell you, we need to be spiritual planners as well. How many of us are thinking about our goals of what we want to do this year spiritually? How we want to, what? Be successful and grow in abundance in our spiritual life. When we don't do that, then we do become like this fool in a bad way. And so we not only need to plan for the present, for the physical, but we need to plan for the spiritual in the future. So this man, what? He built larger barns. Nothing wrong with that. In fact, you and I have done that probably several times. I mean, all of us have that story where we first got married, and maybe that story was we live with mom and dad. But we don't live with mom and dad anymore. Or sometimes we might have, well, we lived in a studio apartment, and you fell out of bed, you're in the kitchen. But then you had an opportunity to get a bigger apartment or to own your own house. You started off with one car and now you have two cars. How many of us remember the days when people had one television? And now most have like at least two or televisions in every house, including the kitchen, right? We all tear down the smaller barns and build larger ones. Nothing wrong in itself. Planning for the future. That wasn't the fault of this man. And so I think we can learn from this man and ask, how are we planning for the future? Again, not just physically, but spiritually. Look at Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 5, if you would. Let's go back to Solomon's words, but this time in the book of Proverbs chapter 21 and in verse 5. Here the wise man says, "The plans of the diligent lead surely to advantage, but everyone who is hasty comes surely to poverty." If we wait and wait and wait, and then all of a sudden we have to plan, we have to do something, Solomon says that usually leads to poverty. But the man who can diligently plan for the future will be a success. So we need to be forward thinkers. We need to capitalize on our present success for future gain. And yes, most importantly, spiritually. So I want you to ask yourself this very week, I want you to meditate, how am I planning for the future spiritually? What's my goals to have more abundance in my spiritual life? That was a good lesson that this man can teach us. Then also, there's a good lesson. Look, if you would, at Luke chapter 12. But now look at verse 19. He says, I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. This man understood he had a soul. In fact, the word for soul in the Greek, psuche, soul, spirit, it's in the text. Now, I am aware that some translators leave out the word soul. The word soul is not there. But instead, they translate it something like this. He said, I will say to myself, self, you have many goods laid up. Now, eat, drink, and be merry. And the reason they do that, even though the word soul is there, they understand that this man didn't understand what the soul was all about. He didn't understand a spiritual, everlasting soul. He wasn't really talking to his soul. He was talking to himself. And any concept of the soul was to feed the soul physically and only physically. And I would agree with that. So that's where these good lessons stop. But when you look at this man, there's a lot to admire about him, about his success, about his hard work, and about his planning. And I think it's important that we recognize that, because once we recognize the goodness, then the badness, the good lessons from the bad stand out even more. So what are the bad things? Well, these are the lessons that we usually cover. Number one, his planning was all physical. It was all worldly. He was what we would call the secular individual. There was nothing of a spiritual conscience at all. Every day was spent trying to earn and to abound in the flesh. There was no provision made for the Spirit. And so I like to say this, the rich man was a failure in success. He was a failure in success. Turn with me, if you would, to Mark 8, verse 36. Jesus tells us why he was a failure, even though he was successful. Mark chapter 8 and in verse 36. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? And what will a man give in exchange for his soul? And so here's a man that clearly was willing to exchange something of a physical gain for the cost of his soul. And unfortunately, he's willing to do that because he truly didn't understand the importance of the everlasting soul. Look, if you would, again, Ecclesiastes. This time, let's look at Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and in verse 10. Here Solomon is observing, and he is observing the wealthy and those that have an abundance. And notice what he concludes about that. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its outcome. This too is vanity. And that's so true. Most of the time you don't hear wealthy people say, well, I have enough, I'm good to go. Here Tom Brady of the New England Patriots is in his 9th Super Bowl. I don't hear any Patriots fans say, you know, we've already won enough of these. Let's just give it to the Rams. Right? No one's ever satisfied. And that's an important lesson that we have to learn, that this man was pursuing something that was not going to bring satisfaction, even though he seemed to be happy that now he could eat, drink, and be merry. And so this rich man was a failure in success. Why? Because if success comes at the price of sacrificing time for God, there's no way you can be a success. It will always be a failure. If you ever put God on hold to profit something in the world, it's always going to be a failure. It's always going to be a loss. So don't be a failure, even though you're successful. Another great lesson that you already know about, ones that we often talk about, is that he was completely self-absorbed. Floyd Thompson, when he used to talk about this, I am told, you might remember this, used to talk and read the parable, but he would just read the personal pronouns. And so something like this, as you read the parable with just the personal pronouns, it went something like this: I, my, and then finally yours at the end. You remember that? Put you on the spot. That's pretty good. It really makes the point. Not only that, but notice again back in Luke chapter 12 and look at verse 20. But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared?" It seems to indicate that this was an Ebenezer Scrooge type of character, that he had no wife, he had no children, he had no one to share this with. It was all about himself. And now that his life was over, that he had made no provisions, no planning of who he was going to leave this to. But whoever it was going to be someone that had not done the work, had not been involved in it. This man was all about himself. He said, I, but God said, "You're a fool." And we can look at a lot of passages. Let's just look at Philippians chapter 2 over and over. One of the things of the Bible, especially Christianity, it tells us that life is more than our possessions, and life is more than ourselves. Philippians chapter 2, beginning verse 3, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interest of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus." So we as Christians know that we don't just think about ourselves. Life is more than just self. But this man didn't understand that. And finally, this man had a dream of a life of leisure, to eat and to drink and to be merry. In fact, he felt he had finally arrived. It was time to retire. It was time to have the good life. So he put all of his hope, he put all of his effort, he put all of his dreaming into something that has no guarantee. And the only guarantee that he had of it wasn't going to last. It wasn't going to last, and he couldn't take it with him. How foolish to spend all of that time planning for the future, but then now it's gone. Because he's gone. Let's not dream that way. Let's not put all of our hopes and dreams and enjoyment in the things of this world, that the only guarantee is that they won't last and you won't take it with you. God emphasized that while we're here on earth, it's time to work, not to rest. Look at John chapter 9, if you would. John chapter 9, verse 4. Here Jesus says these words: "We must work the works of him who sent me as long as it's day. Night is coming when no one can work." There's going to come a time when we can't work anymore. But until that time comes, let us be working for the Lord. And as we see the day drawing near, we need to work even harder. Look at Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews, the 10th chapter, and verse 24 and 25, where the Hebrew author says to these Christians, let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together as the habit of some, but look at this, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. This is the time to work. This is the time to be about the Lord's business. I did a lesson last year about Christians and retirement. You might remember it. It's kind of related to this point. I want to tell you, there's nothing in itself wrong with a Christian working 20, 30, 40 years and then retiring. Taking a little bit easier. And there's nothing wrong with enjoying leisure, going out to a nice restaurant, going out to a movie, taking a trip, going on vacation. Nothing wrong with that. But we need to be very careful, because we live in a world where there are many Americans, and I believe many Christians, and I heard Mike Wilson say this recently, that have come to accept that the good life here is about one leisure activity after another leisure activity after another leisure activity, another activity after another activity after another activity, and that's what life is all about. And I think some Christians have gotten to that point, to where their life is so overcrowded with leisure and entertainment that God gets crowded out. We live in a world that has deified, and that means they have made into gods leisure and entertainment. That's foolish. And we need to have that balance to where we enjoy our time off, but that we work hard, no matter what, for God. It is not right to retire from God. It is not right to take a vacation from God. He is our great Lord and Savior. Now is the time to work for Him before night comes and we can no longer work. Turn to your invitation song. I want to end by a couple more points real quick. The shock. I think I told you this a couple years ago. I heard Brother David McClister talk about parables have a shock value. There's something shocking about the parables. And I'm not sure if I've seen that in every parable, but in a lot of them, I kind of went back and looked at this, and it does seem to be true. For example, there's a couple things that I think were shocking or should be shocking about this parable. Number one, the fact that Jesus says God called him a fool. The fact that he calls someone a fool is kind of shocking. Why is that shocking? Well, number one, the Old Testament has several references to the fool and foolishness. One of the main characters of Solomon's book, the Proverbs, is about the fool. And he tells his son, don't become the fool. But then you turn to the New Testament, and you have very few references to the fool and foolishness. Jesus only uses the term fool three times that I could find. The first time is in Matthew 5, verse 22. Look at what he says to the multitude on the Sermon on the Mount. And whoever shall say, you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. Now, think about what people say out of anger, out of hate, out of jealousy to people today. This is small potatoes, you fool. people will laugh at us. We think that's wrong. But Jesus says, when you say that, you are guilty enough to go to the fiery hell. What he's saying is, you don't use that term in anger. You don't use that term in hatred. You don't call people fool flippantly. The other two times Jesus uses it are both recorded in Luke. In Luke 11, verse 40, Jesus talks about the foolishness of people. And the other time is here, where God calls this man a fool. And I want to tell you, the fact that Jesus says what he does in Matthew 5 and then uses the term towards someone here in Luke chapter 12, that's shocking. But what Jesus is saying, it's all right here. It's appropriate. That's exactly what this man was. This is not out of anger. This is not out of jealousy. This is not using that term flippantly. This is the right way to use that term. I want to tell you, you don't want that term to be used by Jesus of you. And the final shocking thing to me is that Jesus presents a man that even people in our world today really admire, really look up to. This man that has money and perhaps was young and wealth, that, I mean, people look at that and say, he's got it made. That's what I want to become. And I believe that's what Jesus was after. Because what Jesus wants them to say is, actually, this man is poor and he is naked. He has nothing. He's a fool. So many times God shows us what the world says is so awesome is actually foolishness. Let's not think about people like this as having it made, because they really have nothing. What happened this afternoon just reminds me, you'd be flying a plane. Be sitting in your house, and God might say, your soul's required of you. Don't be foolish and waste your time. Learn the good from this man, but understand where he was a fool. If you're subject to the invitation call of any in any way, we can help you. Won't you let that be known as together we stand and as we sing.